Well, once again, happy Father's Day to all you fathers. And as a father of two, seems like every year it grows here, but as a father of two, it's my desire to be a good father to my children. And I know that is the desire of all of you men, to be a good father to your children. But the desire is not the problem. The problem is not how to desire, but how to accomplish that desire. It's not always just a cut and a dry process. And it's certainly not possible to be a good father apart from wisdom and instruction from the Word of God. Now, this Father's Day, I guess I want to bring a challenge to us fathers. And the challenge has application for everyone, not just for fathers, but I'm speaking to the fathers today. So everyone else gets to just take what you want. So, but I want to bring out seven character traits that will help to produce a good father. These traits are taken from the example of the father in the story of the prodigal son. Of course, we're all familiar with that story. The two sons, the brothers, one of them demands his inheritance, and so when the father divides it, he runs off and wastes his inheritance on foolish things, and is hungry and comes to his senses and returns home, and then the father celebrates. And we tend to maybe focus on the son a lot, but this week we're going to focus on the father in the story. So, turning to Luke chapter 15, the passage we read in our opening this morning, the first trait that I want to emphasize is wisdom. Wisdom. In verse 11, now Jesus is telling the parable. It says, "And he said, a certain man had two sons." A certain man. We see an unnamed father with two sons. We don't know if he had any daughters or not, but he has at least two sons. And anyone with more than one child knows that no two children are the same, right? You can have a formula for raising children that you put into practice, but you're going to find out that if you use the exact same fathering techniques on the one child, it's probably not going to have the exact same effect on the other child. That is because each child has a different personality, has different skills and talents, and every child has his own will to choose. So they're going to react differently to various forms of discipline. They're going to react differently to different tones of voices. Some children are such tender-spirited that they will literally melt when you just look at them sternly. I have a niece that was like that. If you just looked at her with that look, she would just melt into tears. And then others, it's just like, oh, you spank me, I'll laugh at you. So there's all sorts of different personalities among children. And so you have to adjust as a parent, as a father, in how you raise your children. Turn to the book of Psalms chapter 127. In this psalm, looking at verses 3 through 5, it says, "Lo, children are a heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward." So it's speaking about children here. Well, then verse 4 says, as arrows in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that has his quiver full of them. Okay? Now, the part I want to get to is the part about arrows. He likens children to arrows. Now, why would that be? Well, because the home is the place where the children are trained and raised up. And then at some point in your life, you're going to let those children go. And they're going to go off and they're going to make their own life for them. And so it's like an arrow in the hand of a mighty warrior. And they stretch that bow back and they release that arrow. But every arrow has its own target. And no two arrows will take the same path, the same trajectory. And so you need wisdom in how you release those arrows, if you will. How do you accomplish that? So this is a father with more than one child, a certain man with two sons. We can surmise that this man fathered his sons with great wisdom. Verse 12 says that the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. Note it's only the younger son who is asking for his inheritance, and yet the father goes ahead and divides that inheritance between the both of them. It wouldn't be right to give one the inheritance and not give the other the inheritance. So when the younger son demands, he gives the inheritance to both. Now, you think this is wisdom? Isn't he just giving in to the demands of a somewhat bratty child? What right did that younger son have to demand that portion of his inheritance before his father's death? Well, actually, according to the law, the son did have the right to request that inheritance. That was the custom, is when the son came of age, he could request his father his portion of the inheritance, and by law the father had to give that to him. Now the catch is that that was not hardly ever done, because that was a rather disrespectful thing to do. Even though it was right according to the law, it was still not considered the proper thing to do. And so this would have been a disrespectful act on the part of the son, to demand this inheritance. His father does not try to argue with his son, and instead he grants his request. I can't help but believe that this father could predict the outcome. In verses 13 through 16, see what happens here. Not many days after, like right away, within a week of getting this inheritance, the younger son gathered all together. For whatever reason, this son was fed up with his life at home. Apparently he had some serious attitude problems, and he didn't want anything to do with his family, his father. So he gathers all together. He doesn't even want to come back there. He's not going to leave a shred of inheritance left to go back and get at a later time. He gathers it all together and he takes this journey into a far country. Not only is he not going to return, he's going to make sure that it's really, really hard for anybody to come visit him. Far country. He's not just moving across town. He's certainly not just getting married and settling down. He's not moving to the next town over. He's changing countries. He wants to leave everything about his life behind him. Well, he took his journey, and there he wasted his substance with the riotous living. By the way, did you know that's what the word prodigal means? I always used to think that the word prodigal meant like wayward. And so you have the story of the wayward son, right? Well, actually, that has nothing to do with the word prodigal. The word prodigal just means wasteful. It's actually the story of the wasteful son. And so he goes there, he wastes his substance with riotous living. It was just a party. Throwing parties and drinking and eating and gambling and maybe going to see the theaters and the Colosseums and all the fun things that he could imagine to do. That's what he spent his inheritance on. Well, verse 14, when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land. Isn't that just like God? When we come to the end of our resources, especially when we are relying on those resources and depending on those resources, God will set something in our path that causes us to see that, no, we got to rely on God. And so God sends this famine to the land, a mighty famine at that. All the food becomes scarce because the crops are failing. The animals are dying. And riotous living is pretty much impossible now, especially when you've already spent everything. And so he went and he joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. This was the pits for a young Jewish boy. Because, first of all, pigs were unclean to the Jewish people. They weren't even supposed to go near them. And here he was, not only feeding them for his work, his living, but in verse 16, he was so hungry, he would have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat. No one would give him anything. So God put this young man in a position to where he had to be totally, totally dependent on God or else go hungry. But back to the father, because I believe the father knew exactly what was going to happen. Fathers, if you're good fathers, you know your children. We can't predict every single thing they're going to do, of course, but we can have a pretty good guess. And we can give them hints as to what's going to happen if they continue on a certain path. Based on the lifestyle of this son previously, I'm sure his father knew right where he was headed. Think of the wisdom required in letting him go. See, there's a time for parenting. There's a time for instructing a child. But there is also a time for entrusting that child into God's care. Sometimes as parents, we have to just let our children go the way they choose. They get to that age where they're old enough to make those decisions on their own. And if they've refused to listen to wise counsel, then maybe it's time for the school of hard knocks. God's much better teacher than we are. This father understood the wisdom in that. And so he entrusted his son into the perfect father's care because he knew that God was there to see all. So fathers, if you want to be a better father to your children, seek God's wisdom. Seek God's wisdom, because you're never going to have two children that are going to be the same. There's going to be times when you don't know what to do. And there's going to be times when you're going to have to let go. And you need to make those decisions wisely. Well, we come to verse 17 through 19. And we see a second character trait that produces a good father. And that is availability. Availability. Verse 17 says, and they're talking about the son, when he came to himself, when he came to his senses, he said, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare? And I'm out here perishing with hunger. I will arise and go to my father and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. Those three verses describe a prideful and willful son who has been humbled by God and the circumstances of life. A prideful, willful son who has been humbled by God. And in his humility, we see that he is able to now take an honest look at his past. And when he looks at his past through clear eyes, not eyes blinded through pride, he's able to see and remember the good things that his father provided for him. The shelter, the food, the clothing, the security, the comfort. All of these things that the father provided to him. And in fact, that he knew his father had provided for even the servants at this very moment. His father was a caring man. And the fact that these memories stand out in his mind shows that there's something going on here in his mind. He's looking back and he's saying, this father was there for me. This father was there for me. When I needed such and such, he provided it. When I needed this, he provided it. And I didn't even have to ask him. This father was available to his sons. Now, just a note here. I'm bringing a little bit out of the text that's not specifically in there. So we're kind of reading between the lines just a little bit. Because I want to make it clear that being available is not just limited to providing. Because you can provide all the good things in life for your children and all the wonderful things and have all their needs taken care of and still not be there for your children. Available for your children means, are you going to be there for their basketball games and their ballerina plays and their recitals? And are you going to make it a point to be there to show your child that you care about them? It's not just about providing food and clothes and a house to sleep under. If we provide all those things and neglect the relationship with the child, then we're failing. Fathers, we need to provide both physically, spiritually, and emotionally for our children. Now, apparently this father did so because what he remembered of home was the goodness of his father. The goodness of his father. Now in verse 20, there's actually two traits I want to bring out. The first is awareness. Awareness. Verse 20, as the son arose, he came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him. His father saw him. The son is the one doing the wrong. And yet when the son decides to come home, the good father is there looking for him. I don't think that was a coincidence. This indicates that the needs of the son were heavy on the father's mind. Not in a sense of begrudging or bitterness, but must have been forefront in his mind through his prayers as he would daily hope and watch for his son's safe return. See, as a father, I think one of the things most fathers deal with is pride to a certain extent. That's just sometimes guys have a little bit of pride because, you know, we're the head of the home and we're the ones that, you know, we work hard and we get this into our mind and we forget that our wives work hard and, you know, all that stuff. But we get that pride in our minds, and then when our children are disrespectful to us, that really ticks us off. And we're bitter and ferocious in our minds, and we're just like, you know what? I'm going to stand right here, son, and I'm not moving till you get over here, and you apologize to me. You say you're sorry. And we can get like that. I'm not saying there isn't a time as a father to take a firm stand in something like that. But notice this. The father is aware of his son. And he is aware of his son's spiritual circumstance. And so daily, we assume, he is there praying for his son. He's not daily thinking, man, if that boy ever comes home, he's going to have to come begging on his hands and knees and lick the dust off my shoes. He's not looking like that. He is watching, hoping, loving, waiting for that son, praying for him. Now, because I believe the emphasis here is on the prayer, turn to 1 Samuel chapter 12. 1 Samuel chapter 12, verse 23. And I read this passage not because Samuel the prophet is a father to the Israelites, but because he is functioning as a spiritual leader. And fathers, we are the spiritual leaders of our homes. That's what God has called us to do. To be the spiritual providers, protectors of our home. In 1 Samuel chapter 12, verse 23, this is Samuel speaking. He says, "Moreover, as for me, God forbid that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you." God forbid that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you. Have you ever thought, fathers, that it might be a sin to not pray for your children? To pray for your family? Because as the spiritual provider of the home, it is our responsibility to go to God and seek the spiritual health of our family. God forbid that we should sin against God and cease to pray for our family. This is the next thing Samuel says, but I will teach you the good and the right way. Teach the good and the right way. Now, fathers, if we are aware of the spiritual needs of our children, we can pray for them even more effectively. And that goes hand in hand with being available for them. Because when we're available to our children, then they feel comfortable talking to us about their struggles. And then we can better pray for them. Those two things go hand in hand. Now, the second trait in verse 20 of Luke chapter 15 is love. Love. After the father recognizes his son, while he was a great way off, he had compassion. And he ran and he fell on his neck and kissed him. Compassion speaks of a longing of the heart to have fellowship with that son. And so he literally runs to meet him. And he embraces him. Now, again, stop and analyze this in your minds for a minute. Because this is the son who had offended his father. First of all, by demanding the inheritance. But then, after having received it, he brings this great shame upon his father and his family's name with this wicked, riotous living. He's wasted away his entire portion of his inheritance. And if what the elder brother says later on is true, not only has he lived riotously, but he has used his money with harlots and all sorts of other things. This is a son that has brought great, great shame on his father. And many fathers in those days would have disowned that son. They would have said, "This is no longer my son." But again, without standing there and with the righteous attitude and saying, "You come and apologize to me now, and you better pray that I forgive you." Instead of doing that, this father runs out to embrace his son. He loves him. He has compassion on him. Now, I just can't get over that. That's amazing. He saw him, he had compassion, he ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. This is before the son ever begins to apologize to him. Now, I don't have children old enough to really do this, so I don't know this experientially, but I can just imagine that at some time some of you fathers have had maybe a teenage child be disrespectful and storm off out of the house and disappear for a few hours. Maybe in the middle of the night even. Now, when you're there, are you sitting in your chair in the living room thinking, "Boy, when that child comes home, I'm going to beat the tar out of them and they're going to be grounded for a month"? And is that what we're thinking? Or are you sitting there thinking, "Boy, I love that child so much and I hope they're okay. I hope they don't do anything foolish and get themselves killed." You know, and when they come in, is the first thing you do to scold them? Or is the first thing you do to say, "I love you"? That's the circumstance. This father is more concerned about the well-being of his child than he is about his own wrongs being righted. A father with love. Do we have unconditional love for our children? You know, that's the exact kind of love that God has towards us. Even when we fail to confess our faults to Him, isn't He still the one who goes and seeks us out and seeks to demonstrate His love towards us again? He calls us back to Himself with His love. That's our God. And as fathers, we are called to be like that. Move on to verses 21 through 24 here. The next trait we see is forgiveness. In 21, the son says to his father, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. So he admits his guilt both to God and to his father, and he admits that he is not worthy. But I do want you to notice that there's something he didn't add in his apology. Because if you back up to verses 18 and 19, he is thinking in his mind, I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee. Okay, he said that part. And I am no more worthy to be called thy son. He said that part. Verse 19, make me as one of thy hired servants. Notice he didn't include that part in his apology. Why? Why would he drop that? Well, probably because based on his father's reception of him, he has already been assured in his heart that his father is going to accept him again. It's just like that verse I love so much. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, because fear hath torment. He felt his father's love for him, and he knew that his father had already forgiven him, and he didn't need to be begging to take a servant's position because his father was already restoring him as a son. So, verse 22, the father said to his servants after this apology, bring forth the best robe and put it on him, put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He is lost and found. And they began to be merry. Now again, love and forgiveness, these are basically two sides of the same coin. Did you ever think about that? That you can't forgive someone unless you love them. And you can't really love someone unless you're willing to forgive them. Those things are mutual. They go hand in hand. Because forgiveness is a godly trait. That's something that God enables us to do. Real love is forgiving, and real forgiveness is with love. The ring on the hand indicated that he was accepted as a son. Accepted as a son. The robe and the shoes were intended to remove his shame. Remember, he had returned home in rags. He didn't have any shoes. On top of that, servants did not usually wear shoes or rings or expensive clothing. And so his father wanted to make it known immediately that this was his son. This was his son who had returned home. In addition, he throws this feast to celebrate, to rejoice. Forgiveness is very important. As fathers, we are going to experience times when our children are going to offend us. They're going to be disrespectful to us. They're going to lie to us. They're going to destroy something important of ours, a tool. Or, you know, I remember one time when my younger brother, not very old, but I guess there's lots of stories of this, but he had a can of paint. We had just finished painting a room in the house, and he goes around with this can of paint and makes a perfect ring of white paint all around our blue 15-passenger van. And most of it was able to be washed off, but some of it was too dry. And parents, you just got to deal with that. Another time, he took little twigs and shoved little tiny twigs inside all the keyholes. And this was on a vehicle that doesn't have those electric locks. So, yeah, Dad was not very happy. But as fathers, you got to forgive. You just got to love and forgive. Otherwise, you're never going to enjoy that relationship with that child. Now, in verse 28, we have the next trait, gentleness. Gentleness. From verses 25 and onward, the focus on the story shifts from the younger son to the elder son, the son that stayed at home. And when this elder brother, in verse 25, he's working in the fields, and he comes home from his long day of work, and he hears music and dancing in the house, and he, of course, is like, well, what's going on? What's the occasion? And a servant says, well, thy brother has come home, and thy father has killed the fatted calf. That was an animal that was kept for just such occasions. When a very, very honorable guest would come, or when there was a marriage or something of that nature, a celebration, they would kill the fatted calf, the calf that was prepared for just that type of a feast. And so the son, the elder son, hears these things, and he is angry. He is angry. Not happy. And he was so angry that he wouldn't even go in to say hello to his brother. He is the one who is standing outside fuming in his mind. And so, verse 28, he was angry and would not go in. Therefore came out his father and entreated him. Entreated him. A couple things there. Notice that once again, it is the father going to the son. The father going to the son. Fathers, even if we are not in the wrong, sometimes we need to be the man and go to our child who wronged us to make things right. And that's the same with any type of a circumstance where there's a relationship that needs restored. You can never, never, never just sit there and wait for the other person to come to you. Because more often than not, they never will, and it'll simply grow worse and worse and worse as time goes by. Go to that person as fast as you can and try to get that relationship worked out. Do everything in your power. But notice the gentleness with which he does this, because he doesn't come out angry. He doesn't come out with a stick. He comes out and he entreats his son. He entreats him. I want to look at that word, because there's a lot of ways that word could be translated into English from the Greek. And that could be invite, invoke, beseech, beg, comfort, desire, exhort, and to call near. Maybe there's a few others as well, but those are the primary ones. None of those words are harsh words. Those are all gentle terms to invite someone in, to invoke them, to beseech or to beg them, to comfort, to desire, to exhort. Exhort might be the harshest of them all because it's actually bringing a little bit of a rebuke along with it. But it's still a gentle rebuke. And to call near. Entreating. I want to look at a few verses from various places. One from Psalm 18, verse 35. Psalm 18:35 says, "Thou hast also given me the shield of thy salvation, and thy right hand hath holden me up." And get this, "thy gentleness hath made me great." Thy gentleness hath made me great. I'm not going to spend a lot of time there, but go to 2 Corinthians 10, verse 1. 2 Corinthians 10:1. "Now I, Paul, myself beseech you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, who in presence am base among you, but being absent and bold toward you." Paul is begging or beseeching through the meekness and gentleness of Christ. The last verse, Galatians 5:22. "But the fruit of the Spirit is in love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith." Gentleness. Fathers, we would accomplish more in the lives of our children if we do it with gentleness than if we did it with harshness. Because that is how God makes us mighty, through His gentleness. That is how He beseeches us, is through His gentleness. That is the fruit of the Spirit that He produces in our hearts, gentleness. Be gentle. I think that's what the Father in our story did. He entreated His Son with gentleness. Our last trait this morning, the last trait is truthfulness. Verses 31 through 32. Verses 29 and 30, the son answered his father, and he kind of has this question. He says, "You know, these many years I did serve you, and I never transgressed your commands at any time, and yet you never gave me the fatted calf to celebrate so that I could make merry with my friends. You never threw a party for me, Dad, in all these years. But as soon as this thy son has come, which has devoured thy living with harlots, you has killed for him the fatted calf." This son has some serious jealousy, bitterness, anger, a lot of other issues too, pride, arrogance. You know, Wiersbe, commentator, explains, he says, "The father explained that he would have been willing to host a feast for the older boy and his friends, but the boy had never asked him." See, look, verse 31, he says unto him, "Son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine." Wiersbe goes on to say, "Furthermore, ever since the division of the state, the elder brother owned everything, and he could have used it as he pleased." You realize that? Because he was the heir. And when the father divided the estate, the elder son now had co-ownership of the estate. And he didn't need to ask his father's permission to do any of these things. He could have gone out and killed the fatted calf himself and threw a party. But he didn't. In all those years that his brother was gone, he really had no argument here. What he revealed, however, was the sins in his own heart. And this is what the Father addressed through truth. Verse 32, "It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found." Sometimes the truth is hard to tell, especially when we know it's a rebuke to someone we love. Again, this father was actually revealing the sin in the heart of his son. He's not denying the fact that his younger son had committed great sins and wasted his life away. He's merely rejoicing in the fact that he has come home again and has repented. And he's showing, you're over here and you could have done this at any time. This is merely your pride and your arrogance and your unforgiveness that is not willing to rejoice with your brother. So fathers, we have to speak the truth, but speak the truth with love. As a review, as we close here, fathers, we need to be wise, getting wisdom from God and His Word. We need to be available for our children. We need to be aware of their physical, emotional, and spiritual needs. We need to love our children. We need to show that unconditional love of God to our children. We need to forgive them. We need to forgive them in a way that shows them that we love them. We need to be gentle. We need to be truthful. These are the 7 godly character traits that we learn from the father of the prodigal son. Let's close in prayer today. Heavenly Father, I do ask for your wisdom in applying these things, because none of this is just easy to do. It all takes your grace in our lives, your strengthening of your Spirit to enable us to do these things. We pray that us fathers, we would have that wisdom to look to you and to learn from how you're such a wonderful, loving father to us, and be that to our children. And Lord, these are good characteristics for all people to have, not just fathers. Pray that we all might apply this as well. In your precious name we pray. Amen.